Good morning, welcome to Under the Olive Tree. You are listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. Today is Thursday, March the 30th, 2006. I'm your host, Laith Maarouf, and I will be with you till noon as usual. Under the Olive Tree is more than just a Palestinian community radio show. We have two reasons for our existence. The first, to provide the space, the equipment, and the know-how of radio production to Palestinian youth in order for them to reach our second goal, to produce content that accurately represents the Palestinian community. If you'd like to join our production team, or if you have any questions, please contact us at our email, uot@ckut.ca. Again, the address is uot@ckut.ca, or give us a call at area code 514-398-6788. Again, that's area code 514-398-6788. Also, I'd like to remind you all that CKUT Radio McGill is starting its 17th annual funding drive, Live Wire. CKUT depends heavily on donations coming from our listeners, and we'd like you to join us next week live on our show. Call in for your pledges or use the internet to donate money so CKUT can continue the important work of providing space to marginalized communities like the Palestinian community. Today we have an interview with Ali Abu Ni'meh, co-founder of Electronic Intifada, the Palestinian news web portal. We interviewed Ali on the Israeli election that happened on Tuesday and the ramification of the outcome on Palestinian human rights. We also today highlight some of the beautiful work of world-renowned Lebanese composer Marcel Khalifa, who we will listen to three songs from his album. All of them compositions that use poems by Mahmoud Darwish, the most famous Palestinian poet. So the first song we will listen to today is called Al Hudud, which means on the border. And typically from Palestinian poetry, it speaks on the situation of being a Palestinian diaspora, where being stopped on the Israeli border and asked for your identity cards.
وقفوني على حدود قلب الدن هويتي قلت لهم إن بيافا خباية ستي وقفوني على حدود قلب الدن هويتي قلت لهم إن بيافا خباية ستي Yeah.
حي بدني يحرقوها من الدنيا يمحوها ويا غيمة بلادي عليهم ما تشدي وقفوني على حدود البد اجمع الغيمات واعطيهن مواعيد حملهن قنابل وبيطيرن جديد رح اجمع الغيمات واعطيهن مواعيد حملهن قنابل وبيطيرن جديد شي ليلة على حدود البد هويتي قلت لهم ان بيفهم خبايتها ستي
That was Marcel Khalifa singing a beautiful song called Ali Hadood on the Borders. And the song speaks to the situation of Palestinians trying to go back home in occupied territories.
Today we have with us Ali Abu Namik, co-founder of Electronic Intifada, the Palestinian news web portal. Ali joins us to talk about the Israeli elections and the state of Palestinian media work. Welcome, Ali, to our show.
Thank you.
In the Israeli elections this week, the new party founded by Ariel Sharon before his vegetation state, Kadima, won 28 seats, less than expected, but still has the largest bloc. The surprise was the large number of people who voted for the three extreme right parties, Shas, the ultra-Orthodox party with 13 seats, Yisrael Beituna, the what is described by many Palestinians as the transfer party with 12 seats, and the Prenshner's party with 7 seats. What can be expected from this new Knesset, Ali?
The Israeli election result didn't throw up anything that was unexpected. It was entirely predicted that Kadima would get the largest number of seats. The Labour Party came second. The Likud Party got a fewer number of seats than projected. But there was very little that was genuinely surprising or original about the result. And the result simply endorsed, for the most part, the status quo. What we've seen in Israel over recent years is a convergence between the mainstream left and the mainstream right. So we saw prominent labor leaders like Shimon Peres coming together with prominent right-wing leaders like Ariel Sharon and Ehud Olmert to form a new party whose philosophy is built in Western media commentary as being in favor of unilateral withdrawal from the West Bank. But of course, it's a matter of perspective, because if you're a Palestinian, this party is actually in favor of unilateral annexation, because Kadima has said its platform, and it's supported really by most of the mainstream parties in Israel, is to annex most of the major settlements in the West Bank, to maintain the annexation and occupation of East Jerusalem, and to annex the Jordan Valley. And really, what Israel is doing, and what the election endorsed, is nothing more than demographic gerrymandering. They're simply trying to take a situation where Israel controls a country, Israel, the West Bank, and Gaza Strip, in which Jews are now the minority population. They're less than 50% of the population, you know, roughly 50%, let's say, and to create the fiction that there is an Israel with a vast Jewish majority and a separate Palestinian state where Palestinians have their political rights. But what Israel is actually doing is creating a Bantustan similar to what the apartheid government in South Africa tried to create, which were nominally independent black homelands. The reality was they were simply fictional states under the control of the apartheid government. So this is what Israel is doing, and there is no genuine withdrawal planned from the West Bank, simply reorganizing the furniture of occupation to make it look as if Israel is engaged in a genuine process of disengagement or withdrawal.
The CBC television categorized the vote as an election of a center-left government with a mandate on social issues. As an example, they stated the election of Israel Baytuna as a vote for a police and a security issue. What do you think of such simplistic analysis?
Well, it's very disturbing because, as you pointed out in the introduction, Israel Beitenu, or as you say it in Arabic, Israel Beituna, is a party whose leader, Avigdor Lieberman, has openly campaigned on a platform of ethnic cleansing. It's his party's official policy and his long-standing policy to expel the Palestinians. You can imagine if a party ran in a federal election in Canada with the platform of expelling all Jews from Canada or expelling all native peoples from their land. Of course, Canada has that past, as we all know. But I don't think any mainstream party in Canada would put forward such a platform and expect to get the level of support that Israel Beitenu got in Israel. And if we go back to the previous, to recent years, between 2001 and 2004, Israel Beitenu was part of the coalition government in Israel, along with parties like Moledet and the National Religious Party and the National Union, which also explicitly ran for election on platforms espousing ethnic cleansing. Moledet, in particular, which maintained its support in the current election and I think increased the number of seats it has. It certainly didn't lose any. Anyone can go and read their website and see that their policy, their solution to the conflict is simply to forcibly expel all Palestinians from Israel and the occupied territories. Now, it's remarkable that during all the time when Moledet was a member of the Israeli government, had seats in the cabinet, neither Canada nor the European Union nor the United States said, wait a minute, the Israeli government has members who openly advocate genocidal policies. We can't deal with such a government. And we require that if Israel is to receive aid, if it's to have international cooperation, if it's to have contacts with civilized countries like Canada, that we require that the Israeli government renounce these policies of the parties that are members of it, and that every Israeli party that is a member of the government stand by international principles, by signed agreements, and so on and so forth. The West remained entirely silent, and they remain silent today when there are parties increasingly in Israel calling for ethnic cleansing of the Palestinians. And the atmosphere in which this is taking place is very, very dangerous. There was a poll which came out from the very highly respected Israeli Geocartographica Institute just a week or so ago, which found that 68% of Israeli Jews would refuse to live in the same apartment building as an Arab, and 41% of Israeli Jews want segregated recreation facilities. And during the election campaign, we saw members of the Knesset, like Michael Kleiner, going to Jaffa and actually harassing Palestinians in the street and waving money at them and saying, we will pay you to get out of the country. This is the atmosphere in which parties like Avigdor Lieberman's and Moledet and others are gaining support and gaining legitimacy in Israel without a single murmur of protest from those who claim to be standing for peace and justice and the dialogue.
In the light of comments by Weisglass, the advisor of Kadima government, to the effect of, we will put the Palestinians on a diet, and the virtual closure of Gaza to all goods for the past 4 weeks, what is the outlook for Palestinian human rights in the short run?
The outlook is very bad because, once again, the international community ignores what Israel is announcing in advance, that it will commit war crimes. Then it's committing them, and nobody says anything. And the example you gave is a perfect one. Dov Weisglass, who is a senior advisor to the Israeli government, said in a sort of tongue-in-cheek, cheeky way, we will put the Palestinians on a diet. Really very chilling language. And then within a few weeks, the United Nations, the World Food Program, and the Office for Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs of the United Nations in Gaza reported the total disappearance of milk, fruit, flour, and bread from the markets of Gaza. Now, under the Fourth Geneva Convention, the occupying power is required to ensure the supply of food to the occupied civilian population. Instead, what we have here is the occupying power deliberately blocking food from reaching the occupied population as a form of terror and collective punishment. This is one of the most serious war crimes under international law, deliberately starving of civilian population for political purposes, and nobody in the international community has said anything. All those, again, the Canadian government, the U.S. government, the Europeans, who pose as being humanitarian and being defenders of international law, remain absolutely silent while this is going on under their noses.
Both the Canadian and American governments suspended all contact and aid to the Palestinian Authority. What do you think of this move, and what outcome do you think it will have?
Well, it's baffling when Israel commits crimes openly, starving people, continues to carry out extrajudicial executions, what it calls targeted killings, but which every human rights group refers to as extrajudicial executions, on a near daily basis, continues to seize Palestinian land for colonization, continues to build the separation wall, which has been declared illegal by the International Court of Justice, declares openly its intention to annex large tracts of the West Bank, what Israel calls the settlement blocks and the Jordan Valley. Israel announces all of this openly, and the sanctions are being imposed against the victims of these policies, not against the perpetrators. And again, look at the claims. They say Israel has to recognize, the claims of Canada and the United States and other governments. They say, well, we are cutting off ties with Hamas until they renounce violence. Again, let's look at the facts. For more than a year, Hamas has operated a unilateral truce with Israel. The result of that has been a dramatic fall in the number of Israelis killed and injured in this conflict. And there have still been a few Palestinian attacks not carried out by Hamas. Hamas has kept to that truce. Israel, on the other hand, continues to kill on a near daily basis. The number of Palestinian civilians recorded killed and injured remains very, very high. And we're told that Hamas is the party that has to renounce violence. And since the election in the Palestinian, in the occupied territories, Hamas has said that they're interested in maintaining the truce, and they have kept to it, even though Israel has carried out acts of daily aggression. We saw recently the attack on Jericho, in which Israel stormed into Jericho and kidnapped a number of Palestinians being held in Palestinian Authority prison there. So that's number one. Second, we're told that Hamas has to recognize Israel and recognize signed agreements, as if Palestinian lack of recognition of Israel is the problem. We saw many years ago the PLO recognize Israel, sign peace agreements with Israel, limit its demands to a Palestinian state in the occupied territories, and none of that had any impact on Israel. Israel has continued to build settlements and colonize land. And Israel, on the other hand, what does it recognize as Palestinian rights? There's been no Israeli recognition of fundamental Palestinian rights, of refugee rights, of right to self-determination. And Israel doesn't recognize any borders. Israel has been erasing the borders, the 1967 borders, by building settlements on the other side of them, and now with the apartheid wall. And so why isn't Israel asked to recognize the 1967 borders? So I think Palestinians see this as a continuation of the raw bias, the favoring of the strong against the weak, the favoring of the aggressor against the victim, and the favoring of those who are violating international law against those who are seeking to have it implemented. And I expect the result will be further radicalization of Palestinians, further turning to resistance policies rather than dialogue, because Palestinians have seen that dialogue leads nowhere, that it's simply a trap. And I think that that is what we can expect from policies which are so far removed from the realities in which Palestinians live.
We are still speaking to Ali Abu Nami, co-founder of electronicintifada.net, the source of Palestinian information on the web. We will go on a break, but when we come back, we will continue speaking to Ali on the state of Palestinian human rights. Thank you.
ويصلي لإلهي في العيون العسلية بين ردة وعيوني بندقية والذي يعرف ردة ينحني ويصلي لإلهي في العيون العسلية
في نبيذ الشفتين
That was Marcel Khalifa singing a beautiful song called Ritta. The poem is written by Mahmoud Darwish, and it tells the true story of his teenage love with a Jewish Israeli girl by the name of Ritta. And typically, as in most racist societies in Israel, that did not go well with many of the Zionist settlers. And the lyrics of the song go, "Between me and the eyes of Ritta is a machine gun."
Welcome back. We still have with us Ali Abu Na'me, co-founder of ElectronicIntifada.net, the Palestinian news web portal. Ali, how does the elections in Israel and Palestine compare in the terms of the spin in North American media? Do you see a difference in the way they treated the outcomes and the issues?
Yes, of course, because Israeli elections are always treated as momentous events. We're told that the future of peace hangs in the balance, that this is the most significant Israeli election in history. Well, Israelis didn't even buy that because it had the lowest turnout of any Israeli election before. I think it didn't even reach 50%. And also, anybody who's studied the platforms of the main contending parties sees that there's no difference. All of them support, take Kadima, Likud, Labor, and the other main parties. They all support annexing the major settlements. They all oppose the rights of Palestinian refugees. They all support annexing East Jerusalem. They all are focused on demographic gerrymandering, preserving at all costs what they call a Jewish majority, a Jewish and democratic state, as they call it. And so there really was little choice. The only choice for Israelis was between those who favor apartheid, parties like Kadima, Labor, and Likud, and those who favor outright ethnic cleansing, like Israel Beitenu and Moledet. So those are the choices the Israeli electorate faced. And faced with those choices, I'm happy to say that the Israelis voted for apartheid rather than outright ethnic cleansing.
What are you walking away with from this election? Do you agree with with other commentators who stated that we are starting a new stage? We are moving from occupation to full apartheid now.
Oh, I've been saying that for a long time. I don't think the election really changed that. I think that the Israeli elites had decided on that course already, and they were implementing it no matter what. I think that the election, excuse me, it really doesn't add much to our knowledge. It simply reaffirms or endorses the status quo or the direction that Israel has been heading for some time. And I don't think elections, either in the Palestinian, in the occupied territories, or in Israel, is the key. The key to peace is to recognize that Israel holds enormous power, which it wields unjustly against the Palestinians, and that power has to be challenged and curbed. And the way to do that is by bringing international pressure on Israel to make it comply with international law. The primary responsibility and duty of that lies with the United Nations and governments like Canada and governments around the world who are duty-bound and law-bound under existing Security Council resolutions, under the Fourth Geneva Convention, to act to stop the criminality that Israel is carrying out every day. But they are refusing and failing to carry out that legal duty. Therefore, it's up to civil society to provide an alternative. And that alternative should be a comprehensive campaign for boycott, divestment, and sanctions, following the model of the anti-apartheid struggle in South Africa, to send a clear message that states like Israel, which carry out such policies, that do so with the support of Western governments like the United States and Canada, must pay a price. And if we oppose violence like I do, I certainly want a nonviolent response to Israel's violence, then it's not good enough to lecture Palestinians about nonviolence, because none of us can say that if we in our societies were subjected to the same brutality that Palestinians face, that we might not respond the way some Palestinians have. So we need to provide an alternative. If we don't want Palestinians to use violence to redress the gross imbalance of power which they face, then we have to do it in peaceful ways like boycotts, divestment, and sanctions.
Ali, in the past 6 years, there has been an increase in Palestinian independent media work, mirroring the increase in Palestinian social activities. Where do you see does your work and the work of the other Palestinian media activists fit in the struggle for Palestinian human rights, as you have just described it?
Well, in my experience, this is my personal experience, whenever I have the privilege of speaking to an audience in Canada, in the United States, via radio or directly or in a newspaper, whenever that's unmediated, in the sense that I have the possibility to talk to them directly and them to me, I found no difficulty at all making the case for Palestinian human rights and making the case as to why we need to change our approach to Israel. So I think it's a very strong case. It's a very obvious case. It's one that completely chimes with most people's common decency, common values, and desire for fairness. And I think because it's such a good case, enormous efforts are made to prevent us from making it directly, to prevent us having access to the media, to prevent us addressing people directly, to prevent free discussion of this issue on university campuses. This is a phenomenon that is clear across North America, where enormous pressure is brought to bear on universities by powerful pro-Israel groups and interests to prevent free discussion of this issue. So I think it's very, very important that we always challenge that and fill the gap. And that's what Electronic Intifada is designed to do. It provides a forum. It provides a voice. It's unmediated. It's independent. Nobody can tell us what to say and what not to say. And it allows us to reach people directly in at least three ways. One is that we directly through people who read the website. The second is that because the website exists, we find that a lot of people in the media who otherwise would not have heard of us or not have access to Palestinian voices use the website, contact us, ask for interviews, that kind of thing. And thirdly, people take the material and reprint it or use it in various ways, redistribute it through various forums. So through all these ways, I think we do have an impact that is much bigger than maybe it looks on the face of it. At least that's my experience.
Do you believe that Electronic Intifada and the other media initiatives like Under the Olive Tree have been successful in reaching the audiences? And where do we move from this point?
I think we have to continue with what we're doing and we have to reinvigorate it. I really do believe that the policies that Israel is implementing, the apartheid wall, this unilateral disengagement, as they call it, are the policies of desperation. I think they're totally bankrupt. I think they're indefensible morally, and I think they're vulnerable. And I think we have to continue to make the case, to educate people, and to act on our convictions. And I think that why the issue of Palestine remains central in international discourse is because, like South Africa, it is really a struggle over universal values, about whether a state should define citizenship based on ethnicity, based on religion, based on arbitrary characteristics that are involuntary. You or I can't choose to be Jewish in the way the state of Israel defines Jewish, and yet both of us have our roots in Palestine and, totally denied the right to travel to the country, to visit it, to live in it. It's simply a situation that nobody in the rest of the world would want to live under. We need to fight for citizenship, which is based on universal values, on characteristics that anybody can attain or achieve, and not arbitrary characteristics like what religion you happen to be born under. That's the kind of state that belongs in the past, that belongs in the 19th century, that belongs in the bad old days of Europe, which brought centuries of persecution to Jews and other people, to indigenous people across the world, because Europeans came with those distorted values in which they elevated themselves above other people and claimed that God gave them the right to trample on other human beings. We need to move away from that. I think it's a very, very powerful case, and we simply need to keep making it. And I think, very importantly, to link it to the struggles of other people fighting for rights. Here in the United States, recently there's been an enormous movement for the rights of undocumented immigrants. There have been efforts in Congress to really criminalize 11 million people on whom this country's economy absolutely depends. The conditions on the border between the United States and Mexico, when I visited the Tucson sector a couple of years ago, reminded me so much of Palestine. And so there are issues where there is a lot of resonance, where we have to be aware of the struggles people are going through and identify with them and support them. And I'm sure the same is true in Canada. We're not fighting for Palestinian rights as a tribal issue. We're fighting for this as a human rights issue that has to be universal. I don't want a Palestinian state or a Palestinian entity that is racist or that repeats any of the pathologies we see in Israel. It has to be something better.
Ali Abu Naime, co-founder of Electronic Intifada, the Palestinian web portal on the net. Thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
وكان جرحي عندهم معرضا لسابح يعشق جمع الصور لم يعرفوني آه لا تتركي كفي بلا شمس لأن الشجرة يعرفني تعرفني كل أغاني المطر لأن كل حقول القمر كل
مرتين مرتين عار من الاسم من الانتماء في تربة ربيتها باليدين عار من الاسم من الانتماء في تربة ربيتها باليدين أيوب صاح لي يوما ملء السماء لا تجعلوني عبرة مرتين مرتين يا سادتي يا سادتي الأنبياء لا تسأل الأشجار عن اسمها لا تسأل الوديان عن أمها من جبهتي ينشق سيف الضياء ومن يدي ينبع ماء النهر لا تسأل الأشجار عن اسمها لا تسأل الوديان عن أمها من جبهتي ينشق سيف الضياء ومن يدي ينبع ماء
was Marcel Khalifa bringing us to the end of our show with a beautiful song, again a poem by Mahmoud Darwish, and the song is called Jawaz al-Safar, the passport, and again it speaks on the issue of Palestinian identity and how the fact that most Palestinians don't have a passport and what makes their identity if they don't have a passport. This brings us to the end of our show. We listen to Ali Abu Ni'meh speaking on the outcome of the Israeli election and what it means to Palestinian human rights. Please join us again next week, especially that it will be our fundraising show. Again, to remind you all, CKT is starting later on today. It's 17th annual funding drive, live wire. CKT depends on all your donations. Join us next week. Until we meet under the olive tree, I bid you all a free, free Palestine.